I'd like to call to order meeting of the Elk Ridge Board of Education for June the 22nd, our regular June scheduled meeting. We'll ask Ms. Marshall if she would please lead us in the pledge of the flag.
Please stand.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
One of the things that does occur, or does not occur, as the case may be, during our summer meetings, which is generally some of the best parts of our meeting, is that we don't have the opportunity to have a school group come and have an opening program for us. So we'll just have to be the opening, the middle, and the closing program tonight. So I would ask for approval of the agenda. Any changes or additions?
Second.
Motion made by Mr. Eby, seconded by Ms. Marshall. Any further discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion carries unanimously. Next, under special reports and presentations, good news. We'll start with, and there is still good news in the schools going on, even though we're not in school. We'll start with Mr. Eby.
Mr. Chairman, my good news comes from Jefferson Middle School. The first LEGO League team, the Atomic Eagles, competed at the Razorback Invitational in Fayetteville, Arkansas in May. It's 72 teams competed in the tournament and representing 13 different nations. The Atomic Eagles received the Rising Star Award given to the team that the judges notice and expect great things from in the future. Also, Dr. Thomas Proffin, their team mentor, received the second place adult mentor award. It goes to the mentor whose wisdom, guidance, and devotion are most clearly evident in the team's discussions with the judges. And I think this is so important as we continue to build through the LEGO to the robotics, to the first robotics. It's just a great organization throughout the school system. So congratulations to the Jefferson First LEGO team.
Ms. Eagle.
From Oak Ridge High School, the 2015 Oak Log staff earned the Walsworth Gallery of Excellence Award. Oak Ridge High School yearbook is an exemplary for the other schools around the nation. This year's theme was Into the Wild. Seniors Jackson Lloyd, Stephanie Paul, and Kerrigan Davis were awarded Academic All-American Awards by the National Interscholastic Swim Coaches Association for the 2015 swim season. 20 ORHS students were inducted into the Sociedad Honoraria Hispanica on April 28th. And during the TSSAA state meet, 11 high school students finished in the top four of their events in the Section 1 championship.
My good news comes from actually system-wide and specifically from Robertsville Middle School. Ms. Kathy Janelle has been a seventh grade science teacher at Robertsville, has been selected by the governor to serve as one and I believe 15 members of the governor's teacher cabinet. And this will be a group of teachers selected from across the state, which will be meeting with the governor and the Commissioner of Education to talk about issues facing teachers in today's educational realm. I think this is a great start to be hearing from those who are in the trenches, so to speak. I'll talk about this a little bit later on, but had the opportunity to be in a meeting with our new Commissioner of Education, Candace McQueen, and I'll talk a little bit more about that, but I think educationally from that office, I think there's some good things on the horizon. So that's congratulations to Kathy for being selected to be a part of that group. Ms. McLean.
My good news is about our orchestra program from the high school and both middle schools. They have traveled to Annapolis, Cincinnati, and Dollywood this year and have brought home a boatload of trophies and recognition. And that's my good news about our orchestra program.
Ms. Marshall.
All right. And I'm going to sneak two in, if that's okay.
All right.
So first, congratulations to our Boys and Girls State Delegates for 2015. There are six of them. Congratulations to Laura Skipper, Si-Chin Zong, Riley Mosby, Gavin Warrington, Peter McGill, and Joel Turner. So hats off to our delegates that have been nominated by their staff at the high school. The one I wanted to sneak in was just a shout out to one of our Oak Ridge High School students, Sarah Kate Rogers, who finished sixth in the nation at the U.S. Rowing 2015 Youth Nationals in Bradenton, Florida, a couple of weeks ago. So congratulations to Sarah Kate.
And that's just some of the good news going on in the Oak Ridge schools. The next item, excuse me, on the agenda is called just the facts about the Oak Ridge schools. And what we did with this item is we tried to present information to someone that might be looking at the Oak Ridge School District as a possible home for their children to some things that they might not know if they're watching the program or if Sarah puts it in the newspaper for us, to encourage them not only to bring their students to the Oak Ridge schools, but hopefully to select Oak Ridge as a place to live. Would like to do something a little different, still have that there, but beginning at our next meeting, and I'm not going to assign anything to you now, I'll be sending it out to you for just the facts about Oak Ridge schools for the next school year. Would like each board member to take one of our schools and to use that school that night to present just the facts about that particular school. So, for example, if you had the high school, you would present just the facts about Oak Ridge High School. So you'll have to do a little digging for some information, or you can go to our website and pull up information about that school, or you can contact that school and say, send me some stuff about your school that we would like to know. So I'll get that out to you, and we'll start with that at our first meeting. We have two meetings in August, so we'll start with our first meeting in August with someone. And while we're talking about dates, also we'll be setting the schedule for next school year's focus on education. Have you already got yours set?
I need to do it in November or December.
Okay. So, Dave, we start in September, do we not? Correct. Okay, so we'll get that schedule set as well. Okay, next on the agenda is the public forum. The public forum is for anyone in the audience who would like to address the board on a topic that is not on the board agenda. The board does not take action at this time, but may have questions to ask, or then may direct the superintendent to provide us with additional information, or have you directed to the appropriate staff member to answer your question. If you choose to speak, please sign your name and address at the podium, then state your name and address. You will have 3 minutes to speak. Is there anyone who wishes to address the board at this time? Seeing no one, we'll close the public forum and move on to the consent agenda. Do I hear a motion?
So moved.
Second.
That was kind of in unison right there. So you did the second. Ms. McLean made the motion. Ms. Marshall seconded. Any discussion on the consent agenda? Then all those in favor of approving the consent agenda signify by saying aye. Aye. Opposed. Motion carries unanimously. Under items for action. First item is the 2015-2016 Head Start contract with Anderson County Schools. Dr. Borchers.
Mr. Chairman, I recommend the approval of the newly amended Head Start second-year contract between Anderson County Schools Head Start and Oak Ridge Schools Preschool Head Start.
You've heard the superintendent's recommendation. Do I hear a motion?
So move.
Second.
Motion made by Mr. Eby, seconded by Ms. McLean. Dr. Borchers?
Mr. Eby and Charles C. and I and others went up to Anderson County last week and signed this contract. It needs to be approved this evening. If there's any questions, we feel very good about the contract, but we do also have Ms. Kofer here as well.
Ms. Eigel.
What are the newly amended changes? Since we don't have the old one and the new one side by side, it's a little hard for me to know what's new.
Do you want to talk a little bit about that, Charles C.?
While she's doing that, I'll highlight the one that I was most interested in. That was the $50,000 we get back. But we do have to have some controls, but at least it's not the $50,000.
Correct. That is the biggest change. They took out some of the performance standards because that's just a given that we should be following those. The biggest thing is the $50,000. They have reinstated that under the condition that I will contract with a gentleman that has been with Head Start previously. He'll come in and do four different trainings just to make sure that we're monitoring the program like it should be and to just give us some feedback. It will not cost us the $50,000 by no means, so we were glad to get that back.
Mr. Eby.
I'll also say that, I mean, I think it's clear that Anderson County wants us to do this in the proper way, but I also believe that they feel very comfortable with the program that we have, and I think in New Charleston as we execute this thing. So I felt comfortable with the contract as it was written.
Thank you.
Refresh, don't go away. Refresh my memory.
Uh-huh.
Once we approve this contract, we come back again in 3 years for renewal of the contract, or what's that time frame?
Actually, I think when it first started, we were on a two-year probation type. And then at the end of those 2 years, we would sit back down and decide whether the contract needed to be extended or if we are good. As far as the five-year contract with Head Start, we start that this year. So we'll go through monitoring every year for the next 5 years. And then we will be up for renewal again.
And they bring quite a team with them.
Yes.
I think this is a management team they're looking at or something, and you want that to go well.
Absolutely. The one that normally they have been coming in October to the surrounding area, so we're expecting them in October. The first one will be a facilities check, so they will come in and look over our as far as our staffing, their requirements, the building, and items such as that this first year.
And it's critical that we have a path forward on this building.
Yes, exactly. And once we have the contract signed tonight, I'll send it into Anderson County in the morning, and they'll send it straight to Atlanta. And that's the last piece that's kind of holding up this year's contract. But once we get that in, we're hoping to hear something very soon.
I mentioned this is just for what it's worth. It's mm-hmm. kind of one of those things. It's probably a good idea, and it's good that it's happening, but will there be a result of it? I don't know. One of the members of the TSBA Board of Directors serves in that capacity on the National School Board Association Board of Directors, and he brought to our board the discussion that the National School Board Association is really going to begin pushing with the legislators in Washington to make some revisions within the Head Start program, particularly on the financing of the program, and once you get that money, how it can be used. That would be a good thing if it were ever to happen. I don't know that it will, but at least the effort's going to be made to see if there can be some repositioning of some of the dollars that we receive. Pretty much, I guess, saying once we get it, giving our school district more flexibility on how to spend it. So we'll see. Anyone else? Thank you.
Thanks.
Motion on the floor is to approve the 2015-2016 Head Start contract with Anderson County Schools. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries unanimously. Next, under items for action, school life. Dr. Borchers.
Mr. Chairman, I recommend approval of entering into a contract with School Life.
For the superintendent's recommendation, do I hear a motion?
So moved.
Second. Motion made by Ms. McLean, and I made the second. Dr. Borchers.
I'll turn this over to Dr. Marzak. I know he's shared some information with the board in between the last meeting and this one.
So I sent about 3 weeks ago, I sent you guys information from School Live and also got in touch with the two former school or the two organizations that have entered into a contract with School Live in Tennessee. I heard back from Cleveland City, have not heard back from the charter school. But if you read Mr. Fowler's article last week, apparently he got in touch with them and they said they thoroughly enjoy having School Live in their school. So if you have any questions, I'm available.
Questions? Mr. Eby.
Yeah, I believe everyone got this email from Mr. Metrock that challenges the School Life program. And I guess, you know, I'm trying to put that in perspective. I mean, basically, he does anybody know who this guy is? And how I see he sent it to Bob Fowler also and to the Oak Ridger. And any comments about it?
I looked up Mr. Metrock this morning. He has a history. He doesn't care for Channel 1 as well either. And that's all I could pretty much find on him.
As I've thought through this, I have, and just because one school district does or doesn't always mean we should or shouldn't. Mm-hmm. But for various reasons, I have great respect for the Cleveland City Board of Education. I've known their members, some of their members, for many years, and they're moving into that program. Obviously, they haven't got it on site yet, but it's mm-hmm. it's going to be there. The question probably that we've heard most, and if we've heard any concerns or questions, has been the advertising.
Mm-hmm.
That's not as a concern for me, because it's not a captive audience as it would be in a classroom, perhaps. Mm-hmm. We would not be forcing a student to stand there and look at it
mm-hmm.
if we went forward with this. So the advertising, if the advertising is appropriate, and I do, am I correct again in saying that we have control over what will be there and will not be there?
What will happen every month is School Live will send each of the principals of the middle schools and the high schools an email, and with a selection of pick your advertisers you would like to have displayed. And those advertisers they do send them meet those prearranged criteria of no violence, no drugs, no candy, those types of things that they've pre-set up with School Live. One of the things they're going to try to do is they're going to try to get people that are in the community to advertise on the kiosks. So they're going to look at not only local, but also regional and national advertisers.
And can I ask a clarifying, just bouncing off that? Mm-hmm. But sure. The way I read the contract, it's pre-agreed criteria. It's not up to a principal. As long as it would legally meet those criteria, it's not subjective. It's not a principal says, gee, I don't like that, so I don't want that running. Mm-hmm. As long as it meets the pre-agreed upon criteria, so that... Yes, there are some pre-agreed upon criteria, but there's not full autonomy of a school principal to set aside an ad.
The principals would have the right to select or deselect which advertisements do run on the kiosks, according to Kyle Young. They would have the ability to select and deselect each month.
That's not the way I read the contract, but I'm not a lawyer, so I won't make a legal claim on it. It's not the way I read it.
Well, I'll go right back because that was my next question. Has our attorney reviewed this contract?
No, not yet. Mm-mm.
Again, this is me speaking only,
mm-hmm.
obviously, not throwing my voice. I would probably support this,
mm-hmm.
but I'm not sure I'm ready to support it until our lawyer has looked at the contract to say that this is good, this is bad, this is indifferent. I wouldn't put that in there mm-hmm. before we move forward.
We can do that. We can send that off to our legal team, have them take a look at it and get back to us. It's not a problem.
And that's just my thinking. Ms. Eagle.
Two questions, one of which was spurred by the email this morning, because when we initially looked at this, it didn't occur to me that audio would be included.
Mm-hmm.
Will the schools have control over the volume so that if it's near enough to a classroom that the mm-hmm. volume is disruptive to the teacher, does the teacher have the ability to either turn it down or contact someone to turn it down? And the other is, when the principal selects which advertisements, do they actually see the whole ad, or they just see the name of the advertiser? Would it just say Nike, or do they have the opportunity to actually look at the video ad?
Mm-hmm.
Because that could make a difference in whether they would approve it or not.
When Ms. Henderlight and I were viewing the kiosks at FETC, we could hear the audio, but we could barely hear the audio. One of the reasons they said is they don't want it too loud, because they don't want it to disrupt if it is possibly near a classroom. But what we're looking at doing is putting these in common places, so they're not near classrooms. We'd rather have them in areas that are away from doors. So if students are sitting around watching maybe a highlight from the football game Friday night, it's not creating a large disturbance in front of a classroom where kids can't get in or out. So we're looking at more common areas in places we would put these. I don't know. I can't answer the second question, because all I know is what Kyle Young told me is that the principals receive an email, they'll select, deselect, and they'll send it back. And then that's what's going to appear on the kiosk. So I'm not sure exactly what that email looks like and what it entails and how in depth it is.
Okay. Those would be good things to know.
Okay. We can ask that question. And, not a problem.
You know, and also ask if it's possible for somebody at the school level to adjust the audio in the event that it is a problem.
Sure. I can ask that question too. Not a problem.
Mr. Filler.
Ms. Marshall.
I think I'm in a similar place to a couple of the other folks. I'm just not there yet on this. And I mean, number one, as I understand it, the parent survey was 60-40 or so against.
Mm-hmm.
I'm seeing us go about tactic with communication without ever having a cohesive communication plan. And I think it's that we're victims a little bit of the circumstance that we're in, because we don't have staffing devoted to it. But I think without that, to really understand how it's going to be managed, the role of it, how we're buttoning up. I mean, it's a comment I made at a previous meeting. We don't have other communication channels buttoned up. Adding another one to manage where our staff is already at capacity concerns me. And then there's the marketing to students thing. I'm still not convinced that this contract is written in a way where we have full autonomy to control these ads. And if the legal staff comes back and says, yeah, you're fine there, then I will be satisfied. But it got a few concerns on it still.
Mr. Eby.
Yeah, and refresh our memory again, how we make money on this thing.
What happens according to the contract is revenue is split 80 to 20. 80% goes to School Live, 20% comes to us. And generally what we're looking at is $200 to $500 per month per kiosk.
And the revenue comes from?
The advertisers. To School Live. I believe why they take 80% is because they're maintaining the kiosk units. They're talking about investing.
They had to get their, the reason it's a 3-year contract is they've got to get their investment back.
For the kiosks, exactly.
But I'm going back to this. I mean, I'm disturbed by the email that we got today. I'd like to know more about who this Mr. Mitrock is. I don't know whether it's, you know, sour grapes or whether he's saying it true. I have no idea, you know. But just to go off and approve it, I agree with Ms. Marshall and the chairman. I think we need to have more information to be satisfied that what we're doing here is – the advertisement doesn't really give me concerns either. It's just the fact that we're signing a contract for 3 years that we can't get out of if there's something here that we don't totally understand. And mm-hmm. the fact that there's only – we've only been able to basically identify two other organizations, and only one of them gave a response to it.
True.
Essentially, that all that gives me a feeling of uneasiness at this point in time. So.
Then I would propose we put this on the table until our next meeting. Any objection?
I will get those answers. Not a problem.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Next item for action is the alternative program name change. Dr. Borchers.
Mr. Chairman, I recommend approval of the alternative program name change to Secret City Academy.
Heard the superintendent's recommendation. Do I hear a motion?
Move for approval.
Second.
Ms. Agle made the motion. Ms. Marshall seconded the motion. Dr. Borchers or Dr. Marzak?
You know, as we talked, I remember we talked about this last year, about a name change for the building. So Mr. Hobby is here this evening. If you have any questions for him, he had input from numerous staff, students, mm-hmm. and this is the name that was elected to come forward.
Comments or questions? Hearing none. All those in favor of approving the name change of the alternative program to the Secret City Academy, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries unanimously. Next, under items for action, budget transfer 7, transfer of funds. This is a second reading. Dr. Borchers.
Mr. Chairman, I recommend the approval of the transfer of funds detailed on the attached information. These changes do not impact the overall appropriation approved by the city and requires no action of City Council.
Per the superintendent's recommendation, do I hear a motion?
Second.
Mr. Eby made the motion. Ms. McLean made the second. Dr. Borchers.
This is a second reading and just in front of the board for the second time.
Comments or questions? Hearing none, the motion on the floor is to approve budget transfer 7, transfer of funds on second reading. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries unanimously. Next on the agenda, FY16 fees. Dr. Borchers.
Mr. Chairman, I recommend approval of the requested but not required fee list.
You've heard the superintendent's recommendation. Do I hear a motion?
So moved.
Second. Motion made by Ms. McLean, seconded by Mr. Eby. Dr. Borchers.
You'll notice the changes in red, but I'll turn it over to Dr. Marzak if there's any detailed questions on the attachment.
Questions? Ms. Hagel.
One that may or may not be relevant, but mm-hmm. Karen, how much of what we set aside to pay fees for families that choose not to pay did we use?
Actually, it's under Dr. Marzak's budget. Originally, yeah. We budgeted like $100,000. I think we're down to $50,000.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah.
Is that how? I'm not sure how much
we're at the end of the year. I charged Sandy with working with the bookkeepers to try to recoup some of the fee. And I haven't checked backward to see where we got to, but I know we were over budget where we needed to be. We were about 52 or 53,000 needing to collect of parents that did not pay fees.
Okay.
So, when you say we were over budget,
we had more parents that chose not to pay fees than money we had available to pay those people, to pay the fees of people that chose not to pay. And so we were working to recoup fees.
And the budget was $50,000 or the budget was $100,000?
I believe it was about $50,000.
And it was like $50,000, so we were over like $2,500 or something?
Maybe, or so, yeah. But that was their task at the end of the year, was to try to recoup some of those fees, so I need to check back in and see how we did.
Anyone else? Motion on the floor is to approve the requested but not required fee list for FY16. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries unanimously. Next item on the agenda is position reclassification. Dr. Borchers.
Mr. Chairman, I recommend that the 50% Glidwood reading specialist be reclassified to a 50% instructional facilitator position.
Heard the superintendent's recommendation. Do I hear a motion?
So moved.
Second.
Ms. McLean made the motion. Mr. Eby, the second. Dr. Borchers or Dr. Marzak?
I'll turn this over to Dr. Marzak.
Yes, this is Ms. Goins' attempt to kind of do what all the other schools did about 3 or 4 years ago. This position is currently not staffed, and so she would be taking that to then work with her current administrative assistant, Gwen Harrell, to make her a 50% instructional facilitator.
Questions? Ms. Eagle.
I guess for Ms. Goins, what will be the impact of the loss of a reading specialist?
When it became apparent, excuse me, that we were able to have a full-time interventionist, then I felt like I could do this. It will not have, will have minimal impact on the instruction at Glenwood, or I would not do it.
Ms. McClain?
Can you tell me what a what the facilitator, what that job is?
Well, what essentially what she'll be doing will be, it's an administrative assistant. She'll be doing the helping do the evaluations. She will be helping do the, as well as doing the behavior within the office. She'll also be supporting, like I did, going in classes to support teachers when needed.
Anyone else? Thank you.
Thank you.
Motion on the floor is to approve the 50% Glenwood reading specialist to be reclassified to a 50% instructional facilitator. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries unanimously. Next on the agenda is the purchase replacement of food service equipment. Dr. Borchers.
Mr. Chairman, I recommend approval to purchase new food service equipment in the amount of $93,748.91 from Strategic Equipment of Knoxville, Tennessee for replacement of older equipment that has reached or exceeded its useful life. Please see the attachment for more details.
Per the superintendent's recommendation, do I hear a motion?
So move.
Second.
Motion made by Mr. Eby, seconded by Ms. McClain. Dr. Borchers.
As the board has seen in the past, Aramark does a great job of running in the black, and when they do that, they reinvest in equipment in our district. So this is another example of that. And Karen may have more if there's additional questions.
That was, yes, my mistake. That was Ms. Marshall who made the second. Mr. Eby.
Just curious, the equipment that this is replacing, what happens to that equipment that's going away?
I'll let Alan answer that, but we do have a system for surplusing our equipment. It's identified as far as what the value is, and we have gov deals that we sell it through if it's worth anything. Otherwise, if it isn't a certain dollar threshold, then it's, we have different options for disposal.
We recycle it. We sell it for scrap if it's not able to be sold online.
So you get some value of it, even if it's for scrap?
Absolutely. A lot of stainless steel in that equipment, so you do get a pretty good scrap amount for that.
Other questions? Ms. Eagle.
This all appears to be serving type equipment rather than actual preparation, other than, I guess, a microwave. Have we completely gotten away from the ability to actually prepare meals on site, or is that equipment just still good?
See if Jen wants to answer that, or Vol.
Two pieces of the equipment is actually steamers where they do prepare the food on site. Some of the serving lines are over 10 years old and are no longer able to be repaired or get parts for. And you have to keep the food at a certain temperature in order to keep it on site. I think Jen can answer about preparation.
Okay. As far as preparation, we're also looking at increasing speed of service. So with the equipment that's out run its usefulness, we're replacing it with more efficient equipment in order to sell the meals faster, get students through the line a lot quicker.
And on a different topic, but similar, for those of you who may be thinking, who could my guest be on Focus on Education? A new person on staff here could be. So there you go, just throw that out. And welcome
Thank
to
you.
The Oak Ridge Schools.
Thank you.
While you're there, any other questions to her from anybody? Thank you.
All right, thank you.
Any other comments or questions? Motion on the floor is to approve the purchase of replacement food service equipment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries unanimously. Next item under items for action is the food service contract. Dr. Borchers.
Mr. Chairman, I recommend approval of the food service contract with Aramark Educational Services for fiscal year 2016.
Per the superintendent's recommendation, do I hear a motion?
Move to approve.
Second.
Motion made by Ms. Marshall, seconded by Ms. McLean. Dr. Borchers.
As you can see from the attachment, we're in the third year of a five-year agreement, and there is some just very slight increases this year. And as you note there, I think this is the first time after 6 years of no increases whatsoever. So having a slight increase seems appropriate at this time.
Questions? Mr. Eby.
So the breakfast is going to go up a nickel and the lunch is going to go up a dime. That's a nickel to what and a dime to what? How much is a lunch and breakfast now?
I'll look to our Aramark folks.
Okay, what was your question again? I'm sorry.
We'll just take the lunch. It's going to go up 10 cents per lunch meal. How much does a lunch cost?
It is going to be $3.30 for secondary schools.
In breakfast?
$1.65.
And so this dime and this nickel is being totally passed on then to the student or to the?
Yes.
Okay.
And that increase is going to cover the 3% increase in food costs and 1.5% increase percent in fees.
Okay, so 10 and 30 cents. Big difference in 25 cents when we used to go to school, you know.
Yes.
Now, why would you bring that up?
All right.
Yeah, I packed my lunch, I think. Anyone else? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Motion on the floor is to approve the food service contract with Aramark Educational Services Incorporated for fiscal year 2016. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries unanimously. Next on the agenda, item for action, AP Academy grant contract. Dr. Borchers.
Mr. Chairman, I recommend approval of the AP Academy grant contract between the Department of Education and Oak Ridge Schools, which will allow the state of Tennessee to pay the Advanced Placement Academy at Oak Ridge High School the registration fee for those participants who qualify for a scholarship through the AP Expansion Pilot and for those who qualify for a scholarship through the Nisswanger Foundation Consortium. I think that's the longest sentence I've ever read at the board meeting.
You've heard the superintendent's recommendation. Do I hear a motion?
So moved.
Second.
Motion made by Ms. McLean, seconded by Ms. Agel. Dr. Borchers.
I think the board knows full well that we have an excellent AP Academy that's put on at Oak Ridge High School, and Ms. Godby proposed this contract so we can get some more people from outside of Oak Ridge to attend and then get a scholarship basically to attend that great academy. Ms. Godby is here if you have additional questions.
Questions or comments from the board?
So this is for people outside of the Oak Ridge Schools?
Good evening. Yes. Yes, it is. Almost all of our participants are from outside of Oak Ridge schools. We train AP teachers from all over the world. We have a participant coming from Saudi Arabia this year. So they come from all over the world to participate in our workshops. So this would fund, this is actually an expansion program the state sponsored. So they were trying to expand AP offerings at other high schools around the state. And so that they need to get their teachers trained. So they're offering a scholarship to those teachers to come to our workshop to get trained. We are only one of two workshops in the state of Tennessee.
So do the grants pays for them to come here? So I presume, does it pay their transportation and their time? Or does it pay our academy to teach them, some of our teaching staff to them?
This contract would be specifically with Oak Ridge Schools to pay their registration fees only. I don't know what other arrangements they have regarding transportation.
Okay.
Or their lodging.
Okay.
Ms. McLean.
How many people approximately attend this each summer?
Currently we have 76 participants registered. This would impact seven from the expansion pilot program and three from the Nyswanger Foundation. So a total of 10 would be funded through this grant out of the 76 that we currently have registered. It's not over yet. We were hoping for more. We usually have around 100.
How long does the academy last?
We have 2 weeks that run, and there are 4 days per week. We have different sessions being offered in each week.
And this is one of our attempts to bring tax dollars into the city of Oak Ridge, right?
Absolutely. We have people come again from all over the world to stay here for 4 days for training, but they also eat at our local restaurants and spend their money here shopping. So we give them information about our local community and encourage them to participate in our city.
Have we ever had this grant before?
We have not. It's new because the extension pilot is new this year. They actually started it last year, and they spent all last school year planning for the implementation of these new AP programs at the high schools. So this will be the first year that teachers needed to be trained. So this is why it's a new thing for us.
So with the success of getting this grant, that we could anticipate that this grant would be available again?
Yes, it's actually would be available to, the hope is that other high schools around the state would expand their AP offerings and therefore need to train more AP teachers and send more AP teachers to our academy in the future. But this is a pilot year for the grant, so we'll see how it goes this year, and hopefully we'll have that available next year as well.
Just out of curiosity, if we're one of two in the state, where is the other?
Maryville College.
Any other questions?
Put that in the newspaper.
I did a press release last year. We'll do another one this year.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Motion on the floor is to approve the AP Academy grant contract. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries unanimously. Next, we're moving to items for information. Standard-based grading. Dr. Borchers?
This had to do with our presentation about grading policy last time at the elementary level, so I'm going to ask Dr. Marzek to go ahead and set this up and introduce Ms. Israel.
I'd like to call Ms. Israel to the microphone. She's a fourth grade teacher. Can I call Ms. Israel to the stand? She's a fourth grade teacher. Ms. West can also help her out because they both served on the elementary committee. Ms. West was our principal representative, and Ms. Israel represented fourth grade. So if you have any questions about the standards-based grading policy that we talked about last month, Ms. Israel is more than willing to answer any and all questions, and she's fully prepared.
Nothing like putting me on the spot.
And I think one of the questions from last time had to do with homework. There was a question around homework.
Tell me the value of homework.
I think the value has changed, definitely, from when I was in school. Of course, I've only been
here. Time out.
Yes.
Turn your microphone on, please. Or get closer, probably.
Oh, sorry. Are we good now?
Yes.
Okay. I think there is value to homework, but as an educator now, I think the value has changed, especially in an elementary setting where we are standards-based, meaning the way we interact with our kids and the way we assess our children to tell whether they are proficient on a skill or not is different from when we were in school, when I was in school. Homework is viewed more as a practice of skill rather than showing proficiency of a skill. We like to see proficiency in the classroom. So there's still value to homework. It's that practicing. We need support at home.
How do you motivate the students to do their homework if you're not using it as an evaluation technique?
They're still motivated. It's a life skill that they're learning in elementary. We're still trying to build that responsibility factor, that sense of pride factor. We still celebrate when homework is brought in. It's still graded. It's still looked at. We're still giving feedback on it. It's just not weighted within the overall grade. So for math, if I'm assigning math homework, they're taking it home, they're practicing, they're bringing it back, I'm looking at it, we're going over problems that they may have missed, we're having group discussions, we're collaborating on it. It's just not holding weight in the overall grade.
So I'm glad to hear that you are grading it and using it.
Oh, yeah.
So what if a student comes and has not done their homework? What do you do about that?
That discussion is more of a life skill discussion. Obviously, we explain the importance of responsibility and how they have a job to do, and this is kind of like their job. They come to school, they learn. We do a lot of in-class assessments, and we do a lot of in-class projects, but when they're assigned homework to take home, the expectation is still there to do it. So when they come in and they don't have it done, there's still an accountability factor. Well, you're still going to do some work for me, whether it's they sit down and do 10 problems right then, whether we sit down, we have a conversation about it, whether, they sit down with a peer and work, they're still held accountable. But it's more of a life skill.
When you have a parent-teacher conference, then does that come out at the point in time if a student hasn't been doing their homework?
It does. We notice he's not bringing in or she's not bringing her homework back. I just want to let you know it is a concern. But like I said, in elementary, focus more on the life skill aspect of it, that responsibility factor. Their grade, their proficiency skill factor, is based on numerous amounts of evidence from other places. So that can be a verbal, oral communication between a student. It could be a collaborative group effort, and you are assessing them that way. It could be a bigger in-class project, a speech. We are assessing them and looking at all of the standards in different ways to come up with that proficiency score. So I think elementary school and the way we grade with the standards-based report card, how we view homework has just changed. It's more of we're going to build responsibility. We're still trying to prepare them to go to middle school because we know there's homework there that they're going to be accountable to. They're still accountable for homework. They're still accountable to do it and bring it back in. It's not as if they're being asked to do something and we never look at it. It's looked at, it's graded. But it's more of we're building that responsibility factor. I don't know if you want to add to that.
Well, it is mentioned on the report card in that under the life skills section where we talk about responsibility, do you come to class prepared or not? So it's definitely part of that factor in teaching students, get an assignment, take it home, do the assignment and get it back, and to be able to get that as part of their routine. But also, a lot of assignments at the elementary level, for example, you need to read at home for 20 minutes every night. There's not really anything you can, take a grade on that, but you can check and see, did your parent sign the parent log? Did you practice your math facts? So the shift is not that it's a grade that goes into an average as it is in middle school and high school.
So there still is some responsibility on the parent to sign a log that says they've done the homework. So, okay.
In some cases, not at every grade level, and it's mostly done in reading because we want them at home reading, hopefully every night, because that helps in all disciplines. So we might not necessarily have an official log at every grade level, but there's still that talk, there's still that communication going on between the school and home.
Ms. Marshall.
Yeah, I just wanted to, as a parent who's been looking at these new report cards for the last, I guess 2 years actually, because you guys piloted mm-hmm. it, right? So it is a very different way of looking at it. It's not an unsatisfying way as a parent to know, because it's really a list of skills, age appropriate, grade appropriate. Can my child do this? Can my child not do this? Yes, no, and on a factor of what for, right? Can they, you know, how are they performing? They're either performing at expectation, ahead of expectation, or behind expectation. And that responsibility section is a sort of a yes, no, thumbs up, thumbs down section, right? And it has a score,
that
as
is,
I recall.
Mm-hmm,
yeah.
That is also graded on a 4-point.
Right, so. But it's not as if I, as a parent, it's not like for my high schooler where he has a syllabus that says 30% of your grade is your homework and whether you did it or not. It's much more, I don't know. It's just much more skills-based. Are you performing or are you not? And, yep. And it's not unsatisfying as a parent, I guess I'll just speak. And now, I can't say that the same would be true for my sophomore in high school. Okay, I have different expectations there. But as far as are they accomplishing in the classroom what needs to be accomplished based on this new way of looking at it, I don't really have any beef with this, based on personal experience anyway.
As I try to think through all of this, it becomes very important for me not to focus back on the days when I was in the classroom, but to listen to our staff who are currently in the classroom to try to make those decisions. Because, as we all know, teaching is different today than it was a few years ago. Okay? So I ask this question with that kind of in mind. If we proceed, and I agree with what you've said. I'm not a parent of an elementary student, but I do agree with that. My concern then could be, as we move on through elementary school under these guidelines, what happens to that student then when they step in the door of the middle school? And now they're faced with a different set of goals for their classroom work, and they've not been used to having homework that counts, and now maybe you're in a class where homework counts a considerable amount, as you pointed out. So do we just say, you've got to adapt? Help me with that transition.
It's a different transition. I just want to say, on a personal note, doing standards-based now for 2 years, I know my kids so much more than before, and my co-teachers, my peers, have also said the same thing. This year, we knew our kids. I mean, I knew all 104 of my students, and I say my students because they are. And that's what standards-based has allowed us to do. We know exactly where they're at for every skill that is on that report card. And I'm going to put myself out there, and I'm going to say, knowing them, homework didn't play a big part in that. Whether they did their homework or didn't do their homework didn't play a big part in whether or not I knew they were proficient on a skill or not proficient on a skill. I agree with you. There is a shift between elementary school and middle school, but there's also a shift in the grading policy in general. They're going from standards-based. They're going to be used to this 1 through 4 scale, knowing that, oh, if I'm a 3, I'm proficient at this, and they're going to suddenly switch to a percentage score, and they're going to have to adjust to that anyway. That's why in elementary school we're trying to teach them the responsibility of and accountability of having things that they need to get done. So they're going to be accountable to do, they're still accountable to do work at home. They still have to bring it in. Like I said, it's still being graded, but we wanted parents to understand and everybody to understand that those scores are not, we don't do an average in elementary school. It's based on proficient, and once they show that they are proficient, we extend them higher. If they don't show they're proficient, we do intervention until they do. So homework is just a small, small part of the bigger picture. So I agree, it is a transition. And I don't know how we help with that other than preparing them for that. I know my kids this year, I have said, look, middle school is a lot different. Things are going to look different. You're going to be responsible for X, Y, Z. And I try to prepare them, and I think that's my job as a fourth grade teacher, moving them on to middle school.
I have a question for you, but I need to ask a question here, mm-hmm. whichever one of you all want to answer this question. As we discuss this standard item for information, standards-based grading, mm-hmm. what becomes the responsibility of the board in this decision-making?
When we voted the board policies in, basically what happened is the board had to adopt a standards-based grading policy for grades K through 8. And so because we have two different levels, I split that off into K through 4 and then a 5 through 8 level. K through 4 accelerated pretty quickly through the conversation. And when I asked why, it all came down to, well, we've had standards-based grading and policy for a while. This was really kind of a no-brainer. The middle school level's been a little more difficult because we have a different philosophical belief about grading and assigning grades at the middle school. And we had a committee. The committee really had a difficulty coming to consensus between the two departments. And so now what we're doing is we're having that conversation with the administration, and then the administration's going to spark the conversation in each of their schools. And then we're going to try to come to a consensus on what that middle school grading policy will look like. But it is the board's responsibility to view it and then adopt it.
One final question from me. And I know this is going, what I'm about to ask, I know probably you won't have an answer for, but if you do, it'll be great. As we look at the entirety of our educational programs from beginning to when they walk across the stage, and one of our goals, our seventh key, is to get our students college and career ready. Somewhere along the line, we have to find that line. Maybe the question is, how do we find that line? That what you just said, I think, to me is a very important statement. You know all 104 of your students. As that student progresses, we have to, I think, have our teachers at the higher levels begin to be able to say that same thing. If we're doing that, then we find out where intervention is needed. We work collectively to do that intervention. And if we're doing that intervention and based on the testing standards that we have in Tennessee, then we're going to find out who is proficient and who's not. And it's not going to be based on whether or not you scored X on a test in class, you did a wonderful project in class, or you did your homework. And maybe I'm preaching or something here. but it's going to be a collection of all of that.
Right.
Correct?
Yes.
So how do we get there? How do we make that happen?
Please.
I mean, that's a question.
Yeah, and we even this year we have a new data analytic tool that we'll be rolling out to do that. And really what you're speaking to is RTI and all the movements our district has done and moving down that path. But as we speak, I think it was either last week or the week before, we even had a department at the high school say, I'd like to learn a little bit more about standards-based grading. So I think some of this will just evolve as we over time, as we get more specific about the skills or the things that our students know or don't know.
I would just like to add to what Dr. Borcher said. I can say that for my team, our PLC meetings were so much more meaningful. We were looking at those standards. We were looking at data. We were looking at the kids who were below proficiency. We were looking at the kids who were above. And then during our RTI block, we made it meaningful. Those kids who needed intervention, they were getting intervention. It was targeted intervention. Those kids who were proficient were getting extension. They were getting pushed. They were getting pushed up at a higher level. We had higher expectations for them. So I agree that really looking at that data that we're collecting as a PLC through our CFAs or other assessments, whatever it might be, is very valuable. It's a lot of work, and you have to have everybody on the same page. And if you don't, then it's more of a struggle. But I think I'm proud of my team because I feel like we did a great job this year with that.
Well, one of the things we obviously as a board have to be able to do is to provide the necessary funding to be able to hire quality teachers that can do that and then provide those teachers with the material so they can do their job. That's where our difficulty. Ms. Eagle and then Mr. Eby.
Well, I still have a couple of concerns. I am supportive of the standards-based grading. I voted to approve it when we first initiated it, and I do think for elementary school that is a better way to do it. my concerns are, I spoke with several elementary teachers about this. Two had never heard of the idea of us making a policy that says homework can't count, and none of the teachers I spoke with were in support of it, although they all fully understand standards-based grading. These are all teachers who've been doing what they do since my kids were in elementary school, and mine are all gone now. I have some reservation about the size of the committee, the inclusiveness, whether or not teachers were included from every elementary school, not principals, teachers.
They were.
Okay, I'd like to see a list if you want to email that to me.
Sure, I'd be happy to.
Because as I said, two of the teachers I spoke with had never even heard of this idea. And just fundamentally, I'm reluctant to make such a hard and fast policy that says you may not count homework as part of your assessment. If you choose not to because your way's working, I want to support that. But if another teacher feels like she can better assess the student's progress by including homework in that, I don't want to be the one that tells her she can't do that. So that those are my concerns, and I would, if you could email us the list.
Sure. Yeah, I'd be happy to share. We have everything was done on Google Docs, so we have all the collaborative docs, all the conversations, everything, as well as all the assignments of the teachers. One of the reasons why we entered into this process is to do exactly what it says, a standards-based grading policy. So we have standardization across the district. What we're finding is that different teachers are doing different things and students are achieving different levels, but nobody can really explain why this kid is here and this kid is here. This person accepts late work, this person doesn't, this person allows redos, this person doesn't. So what we're trying to do is we're trying to standardize across the district so that if a child does achieve a 3 at Glenwood in third grade and a child achieves a 3 at Linden in third grade, we know that those 3s are consistent because the exact same thing was done in both buildings. So one of the conversations we had at the secondary level was, how do you standardize without mandating and removing autonomy? And that's the difficult piece. That's what's tough. And by putting a policy in that says that homework does not factor in to grades, that it walks that fine line between mandating and autonomy. And it's very difficult to establish that. But that's the whole reason why we're going through this process and having these discussions, is how do we make sure that it's firm across the board?
Well, and one of the concerns, and maybe I'm getting jaded after so long, but in education, when you start talking standardization,
mm-hmm.
I hear dumbing down. I don't want to see that.
Mm-hmm. Of course.
Mr. Eby.
Going back to your comment, question that the chairman had on what's the board's responsibility, and also following up on some of the things Ms. Eagle said, I think it's the board's responsibility at the end of the day to see, are we meeting the objectives, and in our case, the 7 keys? Are we being successful? And if we're not, then I think it is the board's responsibility to take appropriate action to make sure that we do meet the objectives at the end of the day. So our responsibilities aren't just setting a policy, but it's assuring that that policy provides education, a successful education, quality education to our students. So at this point in time, I'm concerned, is this just one more thing like everyday math was or something like that? Are they gonna, is this gonna at the end of the day provide a quality education to our students, or is it the process du jour that people say, oh, well, they don't need to do homework? I agree with Ms. Eagle. I think there are teachers who are very effective in requiring homework for their students and can get a lot out of their students. Maybe others can do it the other way, like you're doing it. How do you set a policy that says, I can't do this, I can do this? You can set standards, but what are the standards? The standards ought to be the end product. Are they meeting the end product? Are those students progressing? And so I'm concerned too about saying that this teacher can't evaluate homework in the way they're doing it. You talked about, well, it is part of the life skills. I'm willing to try it to see what it is, but I really think that You know, and one thing that we're doing is we're tracking how, you know, students are progressing through the seven keys. If they're not progressing, then we need to change before it goes too far down a list and the students lose out totally.
I think I got a lot of thoughts going on here. I think when we met, we met two or three times, as two main times as a group, and we had some email communication. And I think one of the things that we talked about the most was when you are on standards-based reporting or on standards-based grading, you're really looking at the proficiency level of the student and the skill. And our concern was, can we really grade proficiency on homework? And we had that conversation, and we talked about it. And the response back, pretty unanimously, was no, you can't grade proficiency on homework. One, because you don't know how much support they're getting at home, how little support they're getting at home, if Big Brother did it for them, if Mom did it for them. Some of them did it completely independently, and there's no way for us to know. And so when we were having our conversations, we said, what does it mean when we're on standards-based grading? It's a grading of proficiency based on a specific skill, and we all felt very strongly that if we're grading on proficiency, we want to know that the child has done it themselves, with support if it is required. If an IEP states certain modifications be done, we want to make sure those modifications are followed. And then we want to assess proficiency. But like I said, it's not just one assessment. It is multiple pieces of evidence leading us to that proficiency level. And being this our second year of this, I couldn't see us going back to the other way, just because of the depth of knowledge we're getting from our students. So I think that's where the conversation was, and that's the conversation we had when we were in those meetings as far as homework and level of proficiency and how we kind of came to that line in the policy.
Ms. Marshall.
Well, I'm going to clarify one time. You guys haven't stopped giving homework.
No.
And I mean, it's. I don't know how we can intrinsically remove homework's impact on their proficiency. I mean, there's no artificial way to separate that out. And if they're doing their homework, they're going to get responsibility points, and then they're also going to be better likely to perform when they are judged on proficiency in whatever way that happens. We used to joke that you can't really ever take prayer out of schools as long as you keep testing, right? You can't remove those two things no matter what you do. I mean, I don't know that you can remove homework's impact on a result, a proficiency result, regardless of how whether you use it as a proficiency measure. And so as long as they keep giving homework, as long as they keep acknowledging the outcome there, I don't know that you're going to be able to remove, because for the kids who take that, and there will always be kids who take their homework seriously and those who don't. And the ones who don't aren't going to be as likely to be proficient on what they're graded on in the classroom. Those who do are more likely, right? And I don't see any way to intrinsically remove that. I think some of this is semantics. I mean, for how we measure and how we don't.
I'm just saying, at the end of the day, we'll see if they meet the standards or not and how they do. I mean, that's
I did just want to make a comment about the process. There were representatives from every school. The first time that we met, we discussed what our task was. We had representatives from every grade level as well as the four schools. And between our meetings, all of the representatives were to go back to their buildings, discuss it with their teams. When they came back and we met the second time, we made adjustments and additions and deletions based on input from the teachers in each building. So I'm not really sure why this particular issue was a surprise to some, because it was very well discussed in our committee meeting. And I had, again, was under the assumption that it was discussed at length in each of the buildings by the representatives. We also had all the principals looked at it, the CNI committee looked at it, everyone looked at it, and everyone was in agreement. So it went through several levels of being examined before coming before you.
Thank you for your input. Very helpful. Thank you. Next under items for information is the FY16 Board of Education meeting calendar. For some reason, this has my name on it, but have any comments, Dr. Borchers? Any comments?
No, just to put it out in front of the board and to make sure that this is what we're looking at. I suppose we could go home in between this meeting and the next, and if there's any questions or real issues, please get those to us. But does this go to board action next meeting, Lynn? No board action. Okay. So what I would just say is if you have questions, if there's major concerns, get those to Lynn and I, and then we can address those the best we can.
And just keep in mind the potential always exists that there might be a change on one of those dates. We hope not, but that potential does exist. Comments or questions there? And again, just to reiterate, if you have questions, let us know. Enrollment report. Questions or comments? Financial report, questions or comments? Moving on to items for discussion, and that would be the FY16 budget update. Dr. Borchers.
I'll start briefly, and then I'm going to turn over to Karen to work through and briefly go through the handout the board's been given. Just as a recap, what we're facing right now is first reading was approved by the city council. There was a budget moving forward, but there wasn't any ability to pay for that budget passed in the first reading, which really puts us on hold in many, many areas, those that you have in your hands, and Karen will highlight here in a second. But there are some major impacts of not having a finalized first and second reading, and the longer this delay takes, the more issues it's going to cause. So we tried to capture some of that in your handout. We talked to Mary Ann Dursky, or Karen did a contact and had many contacts with her over the last several days. And so we feel very solid about what you have in front of you. We had her confirm that. She edited it, gave it back to us. So pretty solid on those talking points. But this is putting our staff in a tough position, and not only our staff, but our students in several areas when we talk about the lack of ability to move forward with the one-to-one project because we can't enter into a lease, for instance. It also put teachers at a loss because they can't get those devices in their hands to do the training that we need for that implementation. So the longer this goes on, the longer it backs things up on many pieces. So if it's okay, I'm going to have Karen go through some of these bullets. We'll provide this as well at the end of the meeting. But Karen, do you want to hit some highlights of what you've discovered over the last week?
Sure. The first section deals with reporting requirements, and normally we have to have our budget in by August 1st, reported to the state. And we were instructed that if we do not have a budget, then do not submit a report. And then following that would be the final date to get something in would be October 1st. And if we fail to do that, the state will begin to withhold our BEP payment. And if you recall from our cash flow discussions, October is our leanest month as far as cash goes. So that would hurt us the most. We would not be able to make payroll if we did not get a BEP payment in October. The operational issues that come from this delay is they were actually much worse than what was in this that's what's in this memo, but we got some clarification from the state from what they originally told us. It's still not good news, but it isn't as bad as it was. They will allow contracts to be issued including a STEP but without a COLA. So they would have to, the contracts would have to be reissued once everything was settled and revised to show the correct amounts. The new positions that are proposed in the FY16 budget and not included in the FY15 budget cannot be included unless they are considered necessary for opening school, which they gave the example of teachers. So they went on to say support staff and central support staff, they do not consider
And if I could
under that
just
category.
Interject there, Karen, so as you look at those new positions that we had suggested, we're pretty much on hold with those, and we additionally had a conversation as an executive committee today. The behavior classroom, you know, we were able to make the teacher portion of that happen through attrition, but there was still the teacher's aid portion there. So most likely we won't be able to put that position and that room in place until our budget is finalized.
And then with regards to actually spending the budget, it's sort of tricky because you're looking at FY15 dollar amounts, but FY16 initiatives. And you know, as you went through the budget line by line, that those initiatives can be drastically different from year to year. And you're limited to spending 1/12th of the budget per month, and that can be looked at as the entire budget, general fund, or 1/12th of a function area, for example, regular instruction or special ed, or 1/12th of a line item. So they do give you a little bit of leeway there, but it will be a exercise in matching two different budgets of two different initiatives and making sure you don't go over. Initially, my concern in that respect had to do with the startup of school costs, because we don't spend the budget in 1/12th increments throughout the year. Startup, we're purchasing large amounts of things to get going, whether it be textbooks or supplies, and things that we buy in bulk that we get a discount on, or services that we contract, or for example, the premiums for our liability insurance. We receive a 2% discount if we pay in July, and that amounts to about $11,000 in savings. So we definitely want to pay that, not 1/12th of it, but pay all of it. So after more discussion with the state, those kinds of items are allowed. They're considered exceptions, so we're going to be able to do that. We'll be able to pay our maintenance agreements on our major software pieces, and also make a payment on our technology lease. However, we are not allowed to enter into any new capital outlay purchasing to include the technology lease that Dr. Borchers referred to. We are looking at a couple of new bus leases for transportation, but we should be okay with those because they really are just added to our daily rate for transportation, even though they divide the amounts out for us for our information and budgeting. So in summary, the delay of not having an approved budget will be labor intensive, to be redoing things twice, to be monitoring things as we go along so that we execute it properly. And extensive delay is going to cause us financial hardship in the month of October.
Ms. Eagle.
Well, the first question that came to my mind is, in August of last year, the board voted to use one-time funds to reinstate full bus service. We will no longer have that pot of one-time funds. So if we have to go on a continuing resolution, does bus service revert back to the more limited service that we budgeted for last year?
No, because we will, I understand what you're saying, but as we built the FY16 budget, then we're not funding that service with one-time money. It's considered recurring, and that's part of your deficit that you started out with. So 1/12th of it will probably be about the same as it was for FY15 during these first few months, each month, 1/12th of it. So we should be okay. So again, we're matching different initiatives and different dollar amounts.
But that's assuming that the city at some point, months, weeks, or months from now, funds our requested increase.
Right. But your entire budget is a bunch of assumptions. I mean, that's one major one, but a lot of them are different from the year before. So that's why I'm saying it's really confusing to monitor matching an FY16 initiative with an FY15 budget. So your whole budget is going to have to be, if it went on and on, I mean, first of all, we can't survive in October, but we would have to rethink this whole budget.
And of course, we're facing two issues. One issue is the budget itself, and the other issue is whether the city will fund the budget as per our request. So we're really looking at two items right there we have to deal with. Mm-hmm. Mr. Eby.
Do we have any insight whatsoever on where Roane County is with regard to coming to closure?
Mr. Watson and I had a discussion Friday, and they have been given some information, nothing formal, but I understand that there is less revenue projected, but not the drastic cut that they thought they were going to receive. So I feel a little bit better that they may be able to make an educated guess on the tax rate, but Mark and I need to have more conversations. But it seems like it's drawing to an end here, and they should have a high level idea of what the projected loss is going to be in revenue.
But what I think I heard City Council say the other night was that they weren't going to do anything until they had a certified tax rate. Isn't that correct?
And I think therein is the onus on the council to say, okay, knowing what we know, are we willing to accept something like Ms. Smith's recommendation, or are they going to hold firm to what you just said, Mr. Eby?
And in that light, Mr. Foster the other night told us that Anderson County didn't have a certified tax rate yet, and he didn't know when they were going to have a certified tax rate. So hopefully City Council will take the guidance that they're getting from the two counties. Otherwise, it is going to be October before we have something, and that's untenable.
Ms. Marshall.
Yeah, just a clarifying question. You guys may not have an exact answer, but just napkin math. How much of the budget that we have requested has a date negate sort of to it, that if we don't spend it by a certain date, we've lost the opportunity to spend that for the current school year? Are there items like that in the budget that we've requested?
Ms. Marshall, are you talking about additional things to the budget or just in general?
Well, more in general. I mean, is it going to get to a point where we won't hire some of the incremental staff we requested? Are there any expenses in there that opportunity will pass to spend the money if it doesn't happen by X date? If we don't have a budget by October, can we really kick off the one-to-one initiative this year? How many of those decision gates are going to impact us negatively?
As far as the one-to-one, you know, the project plan that we're discussing at this point would not have devices in hands of students on day one. So really all we would be doing is pushing back that initial devices in hands timeline. So I feel like we could even do a middle year implementation, but the farther that gets pushed back, because we have to have the whole PD plan in place prior to those devices going out. So it really does just push it all the way back. But I'm not as concerned about a delayed implementation there. And we'd probably have to get back to you in regard to which positions of those that we recommended. Would we just say, you know what, we're going to wait till FY16, you know, or 17 and all those things. But I don't have a great answer probably for you right now on as far as at this date. We wouldn't hire this one, and at this date, we wouldn't hire this position. But we'll do some thinking about that, because we really are up in the air at this point.
Well, and a related question: if we catch up, so we've requested a raise for teachers. If that gets approved, if we get the funding approved, will we retroactively lump sum catch up, and then will we have the cash flow to do that when the time comes, or just do we have to come up with a creative solution to get teachers their catch up money?
According to the state, we're supposed to retro back to July, but they weren't specific on the repayment. Like, if you took the remaining months and divided it by what the annual contract would be and spread it out that way, rather than sending a lump sum from the past month or two, we can get more clarification from the state on that. Something else that is concerning about the Roan County situation is that as we end the FY15 budget and as well as starting the FY16, there Roan County is not sending us sales or property tax until they get things straightened out. So that's going to, a month or two is okay, but if it keeps going, it's concerning. I mean, we're probably going to be about, right now, if the trend continues, considering Anderson and Roan and at what we're receiving in collections or not, we're about $77,000 short of what I had anticipated for the year. So we would have been pretty much right on target, but this has thrown a ringer in it.
Ms. McLean.
So you were planning to do training this summer for our middle school teachers for the one-to-one initiative. Where are we on that?
That was the initial thought. After more discussion with the team, we're going to move that training closer to the beginning of the school year. And that was based on teachers' recommendation and saying, hey, can we have it a little bit closer to the beginning of the school year? So that's where that's at this point. We have our initial report back from Lean Frog, and we have a July 6th meeting with them to really talk about the overall launching program guidelines and timelines for that. So we'll get that to the board for your information here as soon as we get that planned out.
Mr. Eby.
So what's the path forward now with regard to City Council in encouraging them to take some action? I mean, what are we going to do?
Well, this is another step in the line of this. I don't have a great answer for that. I'm going to continue to engage with Mr. Watson and to see where their process is. We were trying to, in our executive committee today, figure out when the next City Council meeting is, and I believe it's July 13th or something like that. So unless they call a special meeting, this thing is stalling at least until that point. So I'll continue to have those conversations, and perhaps there's one-on-one conversations with board and council. Other than that, we have moved off of our agreed-upon budget cycle, and I understand that we have issues with the Roan State, but there are also some natural consequences for not moving forward with the recommendations such that Ellen Smith made.
Mr. Chairman, I think we should send a letter to council from the board expressing our concern that if it's not till the 13th of July till they're going to get back together. Not only do we have to have them pass the budget, but if we don't get the budget we requested, then we're going to have to take actions to balance the budget. I think we've got to push this thing to some resolution.
I agree. I hope that members of council are as frustrated as we are. I mean, that's a hope that they are. I don't think it is a hindrance to them in making that decision for us to make sure, and I know you are with the city manager, and I have had conversations with the mayor. For us as a board, do they have this type of information?
They do. It was sent about 10 minutes after I sent it to the board this morning. Late morning. Yep.
I would be glad to put a draft together and let the board review it and then just send that on from the board, if that would be agreement.
I'd like to make a motion to request you to do that, and that the board send a formal letter to the city expressing our concerns with regard to, you know, the importance of moving this thing rapidly. Because what I heard at the council meeting the other night, you know, I got the impression they think they have all kinds of time. They're not going to do anything until they have a certified tax rate. We don't know how long that's going to be. This puts our schools in quite a bind, much second. Less the issue with regard to funding, what you're saying.
That was a motion made by Mr. Eby and seconded by Ms. Eagle. Any other comments on that? And let me just point out, this will be a draft, and when I send out a draft, you do not hurt my feelings by making changes in that draft. Please do so. Mine will just be the basis to get us started to bring input in from all directions.
And copy every one of the changes so that we're not making changes on top of change.
Right.
You know.
Right. So I'll do that. So that was in the form of a motion. Any other discussion on that? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. Motion carries unanimously. Any other comments before we move on in that area? Okay, moving next to items for discussion. At our previous board meeting, Ms. Eagle had brought a discussion forward to take a look at board policy 5.20, which she has requested that we do at this meeting. This is an item for discussion. If at a point in time the board wants to make changes in any shape or form to this policy, then we would put this on our next agenda for items for action for those changes, if any, to be made. So through this discussion, what we would hope to do is to get a feel of whether or not that's something the board would favor doing or not favor doing. So, Ms. Eagle, I'll go to you.
Well, it did not come to my attention until this spring. We passed all of the Section 5 policy revisions in late January. It was a rather large stack. As you all may remember, we didn't have side-by-side policies with changes in red. It was kind of up to us as individuals to lay out the original policies next to the new ones and compare the changes. We made a lot of changes. We picked up on a lot of things that we questioned, and we changed a lot of shall to may and that sort of thing. This is one that escaped me, because we have in the past not had a policy that said under no circumstances shall the superintendent of schools suspend a teacher with pay. There was always some flexibility. We don't want an unlimited policy like a nearby county where you have somebody suspended with pay for 3 years. But I think there's some room for adjustment between zero and eternity. I would feel more comfortable if it said that no suspension with pay shall exceed 60 days, 30 days, 90 days, something. But sometimes these suspensions occur and they're found to be groundless. But 2 or 3 months without a paycheck can be devastating. That can be losing a home to a teacher who's the primary breadwinner for the family. I'm interested in re-looking at this and putting some discretion in there, that no suspension with pay shall exceed a certain number of days. And I'm open to discussion on what that time limit should be.
Comments or questions from board members? Ms. Marshall.
Yeah, just a question. So the intent of the policy, I think, is to prevent us from regretting paying somebody who is found guilty after the fact. Is that, or later, who is in fact guilty of whatever they've been charged with? Yes.
Our attorney got in contact with me today because he knew we were discussing this, and the two things he spoke to is what you're bringing up, Ms. Marshall, is that it's very difficult in some cases to get that money back. It probably cost you more to try to get it back than what you actually gave out. So that was one issue he decided, and or he shared with me. And he did share with me more districts rather than less districts are moving towards this TSBA policy because it's tighter liability wise. But it is, he wanted the board to know, it is the board's choice if we wanted to change that policy.
One question, do we know what the comparable policies are for other public agencies? So if a police officer is suspended, if a city worker is suspended, if a Department of Children's Services worker is suspended. I mean, are there criteria, or do we, would it be possible to do some double checking to understand how other feel? Because there would certainly be comparably compensated employees for other agencies, and I know they all have policies similar, right? So I don't know what they are. I would be curious to know.
I imagine we could contact Ken Krasinski at the city to see what their policies are for various. We could ask Larry to contact Ken.
I think that would be good.
Just be curious.
Other comments or concerns or questions on this at this point? So I think what probably, since this has been brought forward, what we would do is at our next meeting put this on, let's take action one way or the other so we know what we want to do. That information will be helpful. In between now and our next meeting, if you have additional questions after you've thought through this and listened to what Ms. Agle said, get those questions to the superintendent, and we can move in that direction. Mr. Eby.
So you're recommending that at the next board meeting it would be an item for action? If that's the case, then if the superintendent comes with some recommendation to have make it discretionary, I would want to see some pretty good guidelines on what that's going to be, because I think this thing can turn into an amorphous, you know. So
our policy was before and consider that, because I do know that we have dealt with this kind of issue previously. A teacher was suspended with pay for not a long time, but a few weeks, pending more investigation. As the investigation continued, and it was the superintendent's decision at that point to change from with pay to without pay because the evidence had stacked up. But, and I'm not opposed to that. I don't think it should be unlimited, but I feel like this is awfully harsh.
Well, I think what Ms. Marshall recommended is looking and see, is there some guidelines that they have, you know, see what is, you know, the rest of the city and other similar things, and if there's some guidelines there. I'm just saying that if we're going to, I mean, whether this is right or wrong, it's pretty explicit. It's easy to implement. I'm just saying, if you're going to make a recommendation, not saying whether it's the right thing or wrong thing to do to implement something, make it so that it's going to try to be as easy for you to implement as.
And I think that's the difficulty. I mean, if you can think of all of the possible discipline pieces that could be out there, and to try to write a guideline for all of those is incredibly difficult. But I think what I will do, if that's what I'm hearing from the board, is ask our attorney to say, if we were going to tighten this up or give the superintendent discretion, what would that look like? What would that wording look like? If the board is okay with that, I need to come back with something, it sounds like. So I think we would rely on our counsel to say what he would suggest if we're going to make or propose a change like that.
I just don't want to end up in some kind of lawsuit or something that says, well, you gave this person, you know, and you didn't get to me, so I was discriminated against because so-and-so.
And that's why Larry brought up, I mean, that's your liability concern, because you've now opened that door regardless.
Right, and if we put it on the superintendent later, then that puts the superintendent at legal liability for making that call. And what was the section where we talked about, I think it was conduct, where we talked about major infractions, moderate, I mean, we ranked infractions differently, and there were different consequences based on different levels. Is there some way, based on feedback from other agencies, based on some of the homework we're doing, to tie some of these consequences at the policy level to the level of the infraction that's being charged? I mean, because that gives a little more guardrails without putting it, I mean, very explicitly, because there are certain charges that I'm good with this policy. Truthfully, if given the severity, and the problem is based on how ironically, the more serious the charge, the longer the investigation is probably going to take. And that's the unfortunate part. But anyway.
That's the difficulty with that, and we've talked about that, is many times as you start an investigation, you really have no idea where it's going to go. So it might even be impossible to put it into a category until the investigation is going through. So just another thing to think about. But if the board's okay with that, I'll contact Larry and say, Larry, if we made a change to give some type of discretion, what would that look like for the board to consider?
Well, and let's look at our previous policy that this one replaced and see what differs from that one to this one, because it may be that our previous policy had language in it that would relieve you of the liability. We don't want to lump this all on you and say, oh, it's totally up to you and put you at risk of somebody suing. But I'm saying, let's put a time frame in there and say that no suspension with pay for more than a certain time period.
I think I'm seeing, unless I'm reading this wrong, in the first paragraph there it says 90 days. Again, Liz.
Well, that's no suspension longer than 90 days, but then it also says that all suspensions are without pay. I mean, we could choose to just take out that sentence on line 6 that says, under no circumstances shall the superintendent of schools suspend a teacher with pay. And that gives you a 90-day window, and it says that everybody gets paid while they're suspended for 90 days, and if it goes longer than 90 days, presumably they either come back to work or they're fired.
Well, I think it's difficult probably to do this. I really like to rely on legal counsel to say what would they suggest, and then the board can
I would agree. Say
yes, no.
Lynn, would you have access to a copy of the old policy? Not right now. Yeah. I knew you did. So, but would you send us, each board member, a copy of the old policy? Please. Any other comments? Okay. Thank you. Any old business? New business? Communications? Just one quick one. Again, did have the opportunity to meet with the Commissioner of Education at a TSBA board meeting. I've said this before, very impressed. She's, I think, going to the best of her ability, under the direction of the governor, move us in an appropriate direction. Just two things I want to point out quickly for you. One, for you to be on the lookout for additional information. TSBA is working on a project called the Tennessee Digital Learning Project, and they're working with Apple to begin to provide textbooks online free. The state of Texas is now doing this through Apple. There are some funding issues, obviously, but what they would hope to do is to have 16 high school courses online by March of 2016. There is a meeting taking place this first part of next month where all of the legislators, both senators and representatives, have been invited to this meeting to discuss that topic with them. Apple representatives will be there. We'll have to have some initiative from our state legislature. But the hope again is that in March of 2016, digital learning materials for all of those 16 courses and resources will be available for the high school teachers without charge, which would be pretty amazing. Now, that's kind of like the other thing I said, whether this will happen or not, we don't know. But the movement is underway. With the support of TSBA, and the Commissioner of Education does support this as well. So we'll follow that and see what happens. I thought it was interesting. I perked up a little bit when she said this. The Commissioner said that her goal as Commissioner of Education in Tennessee was to create a skill set that provides for success after graduation. Music to our ears. Well, I hope that that comes to fruition. So, with that being said, anything else? If not, we're adjourned. Thank each of you.